Wolfbane by Frederick Pohl and C.M. Kornbluth. Chapter 1. Appallingly, the Earth and the Moon had been kidnapped from the solar system. But who were the kidnappers? And what ransom did they want? Wolfbane by Frederick Pohl and C.M. Kornbluth. Chapter 1. Roget Germain, banker of Wheeling, West Virginia, a citizen, woke gently from a citizen's dreamless sleep. It was the third hour rising time, the time proper to a day of exceptional opportunity to appreciate. Citizen Germain dressed himself in the clothes proper for the appreciation of great works, such as viewing the Empire State ruins against storm clouds from a small boat, or walking in silent single file across the remaining course of the Golden Gate Bridge. Or, as today, one hoped, witnessing the recreation of the sun. Germain, with difficulty, regained a citizen's necessary calm. One was tempted to meditate on improper things. Would the sun be recreated? What if it were not? He put his mind to his dress. First of all, he put on an old and storied bracelet, a veritable identity bracelet of heavy silver links, and a plate which was inscribed, PFC Joe Hartman, Korea, 1953. His fellow jewelry appreciators would have envied him that bracelet, if they had been capable of such an emotion as envy. No other ID bracelet as much as 250 years old was known to exist in Wheeling. His finest shirt and pair of light pants went next to his skin, and over them he wore a loose parka whose seams had been carefully weakened. When the sun was recreated, every 5 years or so, it was the custom to remove the parka gravely and rend it with the prescribed graceful gestures, but not so drastically that it could not be stitched together again. Hence the weakened seams. This was, he counted, the 41st day on which he and all of Wheeling had donned the appropriate sun recreation clothing. It was the 41st day on which the sun, no longer white, no longer blazing yellow, no longer even bright red, had risen and displayed a color that was darker maroon, and always darker. It had, thought Citizen Germain, never grown so dark and so cold in all his life. Perhaps it was an occasion for special viewing. For surely it would never come again, this opportunity to see the old sun so near to death. One hoped. Gravely, Citizen Germain completed his dressing, thinking only of the act of dressing itself. It was by no means his specialty, but he considered, when it was done, that he had done it well, in the traditional flowing gestures with no flailing, at all times balanced lightly on the ball of the foot. It was all the more perfectly consummated because no one saw it but himself. He woke his wife gently by placing the palm of his hand on her forehead as she lay neatly, in the prescribed fashion, on the woman's third of the bed. The warmth of his hand gradually penetrated the layers of sleep. Her eyes demurely opened. "Citizeness Germain," he greeted her, making the assurance of identity sign with his left hand. "Citizen Germain," she said, with the assurance of identity inclination of the head, which was prescribed when the hands were covered. He retired to his tiny study. It was the time appropriate to meditation on the properties of connectivity. Citizen Germain was skilled in meditation, even for a banker. It was a grace in which he schooled himself since earliest childhood. Citizen Germain, his young face composed, his slim body erect as he sat, but in no way tense or straining, successfully blanked out, one after another, all of the external sounds and sights and feelings that interfered with proper meditation. His mind was very nearly vacant, except for one central problem, connectivity. Over his head and behind, out of sight, the cold air of the room seemed to thicken and form a, call it a blob of air. There was a name for these blobs of air. They had been seen before. They were a known fact of existence in Wheeling and in all the world. They came. They hovered, and they went away, sometimes not alone. If someone had been in the room with Citizen Germain to look at it, he would have seen a distortion.